Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Today is July 3rd, 2020. The Coconuts Podcast delivers impactful, weird, and wondrous reporting by our journalists on the ground in eight cities: Singapore, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Manila, Jakarta, KL, Yangon, and Bali. Listen to headline news and insightful interviews on matters large and small designed for people located in or curious about Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Byron Perry.
I'm Vim Shanmugam.
And I'm Summer Lee.
How you guys doing on this Friday?
Good.
Same old. How was it different from last Friday?
Yeah. I think, Summer, you're ready to get back to the office maybe, right?
Kind of, yeah. I miss grass. You guys miss grass?
Grass. Like grass growing in the fields?
Kind of, yeah. Like, remember what a tree looked like? It was fun.
I get outside a lot. There's no laws against being outside. I actually see grass quite a lot. Is there no grass in your neighborhood?
Well, there is, but you know, I wish I could be sitting out there 24/7 now.
Yeah.
Just to make up for lost time.
It's been, and I think everywhere in Singapore, it's been really overgrown, the grass and just like vegetation, because all the people who cut it are also kind of on lockdown. Mm. There's been some really cool, I took some photos of this area in my neighborhood that's kind of just a little field in between the highway and the housing estate that is just totally overgrown. And it had some people had put some chairs out in this field, but the chairs got overgrown already with like vines. And it reminds me of the movie that was on Netflix, Annihilation.
Oh yeah, I love that movie. Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I read the book and it's all about like overgrown nuclear wasteland areas. And
yeah,
definitely got some post-apocalyptic vibes with the overgrown vegetation.
That's so funny. Nature finds a way.
Yes. And then Singapore kind of went back to work a bit, although again, a lot of people are still working from home. There was all these encounters with boars. Did you guys see that? Like, I don't know if that seemed to be quite a few boar encounters more than normal. There was one that was an MRT station, one that literally charged these people playing golf.
Did they smash the boar smashed the glass like at Sengkang MRT. Yeah. So. First of all, I'm like,
no joke.
Sorry?
No.
Yeah.
Boars are no joke. They will hurt you.
I love it. There was one charging through an open road too. I don't remember where it was, but yeah, it was this guy filming from his car. And then just on his right, there was just a boar charging with like no regard for the traffic light, you know?
Clearly. Did you guys see the video on the golf course?
I did not. I must
say. That was another recent one, I'm pretty sure. I think it was at Singapore Country Club. But this big ass boar just charges these guys who are golfing, and a guy gets great footage of it, like literally charging at him, and all the guys have their golf clubs out and are like whacking at it. It's like, ah!
Oh,
no. I think everyone was fine.
Okay. Poor boar.
Yeah, man.
We're in their territory, so nature is healing. The boars are attacking us. It's a good thing.
Mm, reparations. You know what? Beat those golfers up.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I live in that. I mean, sort of northern eastern area. There's a lot of like obviously still forestry in some parts over here. And there are all types of animals. Apparently, and this is alleged, there's like a crocodile swimming in the Punggol like area, so I don't know how true that is, but
well,
that's the rumor.
Is that in the causeway, like the?
It's close by. Yeah, it's close by. Yeah,
there's tons of crocodiles up there.
Yeah,
nice.
I've seen many photos and videos, and they're quite big. I'm actually like shocked. It's not more of a thing that people talk about, that they're quite big crocodiles up there.
Yeah, I think the saltwater ones are huge. Like,
yeah, they're saltwater crocs.
Yeah. So
very scary, but very interesting and cool. I like it. I want to go see some. I've never seen, I want to go up to, I think the one of the best places to potentially try and see the crocs is Sungai Buloh.
Yeah, the wetlands, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can see all kinds of like crazy creatures there. I think like, there are not Komodo dragons, but monitor lizards. Yeah, and like giant spiders, and mudskippers and crocodiles and all types of birds. It's not actually like a very big area, like once you get there. Yeah.
You can just go to Botanic Gardens, though, if you want to see some big ass monitor lizards. They have some huge ones there.
Oh, gosh.
I saw one there that literally, like, I am into animals, so I know a fair bit about them. And this one was like the size of a Komodo dragon. It was it was much larger than a your standard monitor lizard. I think it was probably 6 feet from head to the tip of his tail, maybe bigger. Much bigger than a large dog, like the size of a mastiff.
Okay. yeah. Well, that's a good thing. Life is coming back, but hopefully they don't stay away.
Yes.
Well, to switch gears a bit, let's start with our stories.
Top stories of the week. Let's go.
Yeah. So I think we can only start in one place, and that is the general election in Singapore, which is heating up. Everyone goes to vote next Friday. And since then, the rallies have started. Obviously, Parliament was dissolved last week for all of us to start. And, you know, all the shenanigans have begun. Mm-hmm. It's been quite interesting, but we'll start with something that happened just a couple of days ago, where a Bukit Batok candidate for PAP, Murali Pillay, he went online to say that his son was being bullied. There was some post about how his son had committed some offenses, and essentially they were bringing this to light, and it was a bit slanderous and a bit of a scandal. And so he asked voters and everyone to sort of lay off and you know, not go personal, which is something that has been highlighted by all candidates in general. So yeah, he just asked for people to be more, I guess, just to be a little bit more wary about what's happened, and that his son is obviously like in prison, like serving his sentence for things that he's done. The interesting thing is that, like, he never actually, like, says what the specifics of what happened with regard to...
So his son's in prison?
Yeah, one of his sons... So he has two sons, and one of his sons was involved in sort of a financial scandal of some sort. Like, they didn't actually, like, say what it was. In fact, like, people tried to look online to find out what he was specifically talking about, but they couldn't really find any news about it. So... and essentially, like, he's now, like, serving a sentence, and someone else who...
That's not going to help his cause. Nobody look into this mysterious crime my son committed that he's serving prison for, but that there's not much info on about.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, like, I think people, once he put it out there, people obviously wanted to find out what it was.
Yeah.
And there was no, like, you know, criminal proceedings, like no info about any criminal proceedings about either one of his sons could be found online. Yeah. And, like, he didn't even, like, reference what the post was that sort of alerted him to putting up his own post for sympathy. But yeah, so I think people were really, like, skeptical about it. And, you know, some people were thinking, oh, this is just virtue signaling, or, you know, creating some sort of false empathy or sympathy for him, for him and all this stuff. So it's just kind of a weird thing. So Bukit Batok's being contested by the Singapore Democratic Party and Chee Soon Juan. And he even said, like, yeah, just lay off the personal attacks. He doesn't want people to attack him on a personal level. So yeah, I guess, like, there's some, you know, we're all trying to make sure that, you know, no one's going to go below the belt. But the thing is, like, no one knows what he's specifically talking about. So it might be one of those cases where it's just a boy who cries wolf, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it was the best strategy to talk about it if it's something that there's not a lot of info about out there. You know what I mean? Because, of course, people are going to look into it. But
people on Reddit have so much time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really odd. Just an odd thing.
Yeah. But yeah, over in Jakarta, culinary pride versus Columbusing. The reactions to Gordon Ramsay's Indonesian visit. But yeah, everybody's talking about it. So Gordon Ramsay... he went to West Sumatra, and he was praised for a crucial moment in which Indonesian cuisine, which is kind of obscure in many parts of the world, can be put on the map. But yeah, does Indonesian food really need discovering? So National Geographic yesterday aired the latest episode of its series, Gordon Ramsay Uncharted, in which the celebrated, some might say legendary, chef was visited West Sumatra in his journeys to some of the most incredible and remote locations on the earth in search of culinary inspiration, epic adventures, and cultural experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so sure, a province with like a population of 5.1 million is not one we call remote, but, you know, it just sounds like why dude finds thing and now why people know it exists. But okay, so it's like, yeah, sure, he can. So he was cooking with rendang. He put in an omelet in a cast iron skillet, of course. Yeah, so now what? I guess people are more informed of what rendang is and whether it's crispy or not.
Rendang can't catch a break in the Western world of moronic trout or like food personalities butchering it, I guess.
Mm.
For those who don't know, there was a big scandal about 2 years ago, maybe, where on, I think it was MasterChef or some cooking show, Western judge of the show, I think he was Australian or British, was like to a Malaysian lady. And rendang, as anyone who knows this part of the world knows, is rendang is a, I would say, stewed beef, generally beef and mutton dish that is very much like not crispy. It's a wet and juicy dish. And the judge was like, it's not crispy. Like, what the hell is this? Your rendang isn't even crispy. Which was just idiotic because rendang is not crispy whatsoever. In fact, our old editor, Ilias, actually tried to make crispy rendang as a joke. Wow. And I forget how it turned out. I think it was okay. But yeah, I think this is a really interesting story. I personally don't love Gordon Ramsay. Find him kind of annoying. And it's really interesting when you think about the audiences of these shows and the concept of like exoticism and other, because it's understandable that if people are in Britain or in America, like they don't have a clue about Sumatran food, you know, but I think there's a better way to do it without being like, we've discovered this amazing cuisine. It's like this cuisine has been around for hundreds of thousands of years and this place has millions of people of it. So I think you can say, hey, we're going to show you about this thing that you have no clue about without Columbusing, and don't put rendang in a cast iron skillet.
In an omelet that looks kind of dry.
In an omelet,
kind of dry. Yeah. I'm just saying, I'm not Gordon Ramsay, but that looks kind of dry. And yeah, dude, when there's rendang, there needs to be rice, and there's like a quote somewhere in the Constitution, I'm assuming. But yeah.
Yeah. He's really obvious. I think it is in like, the Constitution. Did you guys actually watch
of Indonesia and Malaysia? No, I haven't. I did watch a clip though where he was cooking with the guy like in the rain. I mean, it looked okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think like, it looked fine. But I think generally like in Ramsay's like shows, like I do enjoy some of his shows, especially this show is probably a little bit better than, you know, things like Kitchen Nightmares or whatever other ones, which I really find like really annoying. But but I think the whole scenario of like Columbusing, I think especially in this time, is probably not the way to go, but you know, I don't think he definitely didn't win. I think that's the aspect of the show, right? Like that he sort of learns how to
does he compete with the local
he tries to cook a dish and basically not get slammed for it by like some of the elders of the town. So
he has the he has the famous clip where he made pad thai. Have you seen that? And the chef is like, garbage, get the shit out of here. That's one of my favorite clips of Gordon Ramsay. Addition to him calling a woman an idiot sandwich with
iconic
two pieces of bread.
That will go down
hashtag iconic. But yeah, I think it actually is really thought provoking for me. And I think maybe for you too, Vim, because we produce food shows and we're wanting to produce food shows in this part of the world and try and sell them to the West. And I think there's a way that it can be done that does, you know, educate the Western viewer and acknowledge that this is something they have no clue about oftentimes, but without making it like we discovered. I guess that's what it is. You don't want to say we've discovered this amazing thing that has existed for a long time.
Not to like promote like shows, but a great show and a host to follow or watch right now. I don't think we have access to it in Singapore yet, but it's called Taste the Nation by Padma Lakshmi, who it's a Hulu show. Mm-hmm. And she actually goes to learn about how immigrants have brought different types of food to America. And it's not in a way of like, you know, Columbusing or anything. It's actually celebrating like what the original dishes were and how they become a little bit more part of American culture, like things like tacos, even, you know, like all those things are put there. And it's like very, it's so far I've watched a couple episodes and they're like really respectful. And then, you know, she's a fan of food, you know, and I think like, it's a different take. And I think a more educational, empathetic take on celebrating food.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. One thing I am happy about, although a little bit selfishly not wanting to happen, is I love Indonesian food, and I specifically love West Sumatran food, like Padang, Nasi Padang. It's one of my favorite foods in the world, and I think it deserves more recognition. So I think that's a cool aspect of it. Anyways, moving on to Thailand, big news in Thailand. Basically, things are opening up, and the government has put in place and is launching on July 15th, a domestic tourism program where Thai folks, and I believe it is only Thai folks, but I'm not 100% sure, can be paid and subsidized to travel within the country. Registered users of the Pocket Money app, which I think is supported by the government, can get 40% of their accommodation expense capped at 3,000 baht per night for up to 5 nights, one time only during the program. This is part of a $22.4 billion fund, which is, let me see, that's almost $1 billion US. It's probably about $700 million US, subsidizing travel and accommodations for Thai nationals through October. So yeah, a little government subsidy, little stimulus going on in Thailand. I think that's exciting for people who probably have been stuck at home quite a bit because Thailand did have a lockdown, that they can now go and travel throughout the country and even get some of that subsidized by the government. Right now, there's still very limited flights in and out of Thailand. That's another thing we covered, which I'm not going to talk about too much, but there's a lot of rules and regulations are just starting to open up that business people from certain countries who go through a lot of rules and procedures can enter Thailand. In other big news, nightlife opened on July 1st. Many stories about this. I think all the wires had stories pretty, they were all doing the same story, which they all kind of, you know, there's the regular checkup on Bangkok's prostitution industry. And I think with nightlife opening up, everyone was doing the story about, oh, what's it like in the go-go bars and prostitution venues of Thailand with the new rules and regulations, and lots of photos of dancing girls with like masks and visors on, which is what is the case. Yeah, lots of social distancing and cleanliness procedures in place at bars, whether they be red light district bars or not. And so I think everybody was very excited on July 1st to go out and have some drinks, whether in Bangkok, Phuket, Chiang Mai, or anywhere else. Bars are closing at 12 though, so you got to get your kicks in before midnight, and then you got to go home. But yeah, I think nature is returning in Thailand. The wildlife is coming back out to play. Some good news there, and let's see how things progress with the country opening up to foreign tourists and people flying in from outside Thailand.
Yeah, I saw some photos of the first July bars. Some were, you know, doing the social distancing. Everyone was like sort of following the rules. And then there were other ones where it was just like, this is a mess.
Yeah.
Quite funny. Well, moving from Thailand to Selangor in Malaysia, I have some potentially great news for you guys because Taco Bell is coming to Malaysia.
Not Singapore.
Rendang tacos, maybe?
Oh, Lord.
So the California
base. Did they ever have a Taco Bell here in Singapore?
We did, they like did. Super did long ago.
Yeah, okay. They did a long time ago. So the California-based fast food restaurant is coming to Petaling Jaya. And yeah, everyone's like excited for it. They posted it on their Instagram and their Facebook, and basically everyone started getting excited about it. And one thing that everyone's looking forward to is the quote unquote Malaysianized dishes, like the potential nasi lemak taco. So yeah, it should be quite exciting. They've sort of actually Taco Bell has been quite Taco Bell has actually been quite aggressive, I feel, in the last like couple years in Southeast Asia. They've opened 6 restaurants in Philippines, and they have 5 in Thailand. So maybe in Malaysia, they might. Who knows? Maybe they might come back to Singapore.
Do it, do it.
I didn't know they have, because they opened their first one in Thailand, which was had a lot of fanfare, and it was right next to our old office at Chitlong BTS. We covered it heavily. They were like Taco Head fans there. I think they were given by Taco Bell, but like I think expat dudes who waited to get in where they gave them like foam taco heads, and they were all psyched to get in there. It's America's favorite Mexican inspired cuisine. Because it's not Mexican.
I mean, if it comes to like fast food, like it's only Chipotle for me, but that's not in.
But that's fast casual. That's almost, I would say that's a step up. And I love Chipotle. Chipotle is awesome. When is Chipotle coming to this region? That would be really cool.
I don't think they franchise out of the US, right? I think they're only, they're only US. Yeah. Which is so bad. They should franchise. People love it.
I absolutely love Chipotle. I mean, I like local places that I know better, but in a pinch and anywhere, Chipotle is always good. But yeah, it's funny. I think rendang would work in a taco a lot more than like nasi lemak. I don't see how that would, because like you're going to put the rice in the taco, and then I guess fried chicken could be okay. But Mexican food, actually, again, not that Taco Bell is actually Mexican food, but it's inspired. And so it's tacos and burritos, and works really well, I think, with other cuisines, because it's actually a lot of Mexican food has kind of the same core structure, which is that some sort of carb, whether it's a tortilla or chips or a taco shell, holds some sort of meat. And then there's some garnishes. So like there's very famous Korean Mexican fusion, which started in LA from kind of the original food truck, which launched this whole global food truck trend. It was called I'm blank on the name, but it's by a guy I think called Roy Choi. And it really works well, because Korean barbecued deliciously seasoned meats, you just put it in a taco and it works really well. So maybe there will be some good Malaysian Taco Bell fusions.
I'm just thinking about how like Malaysia was mad at us because McDonald's in Singapore came out a nasi lemak burger. So like maybe this is like, you know, the payback. Just gonna get revenge with like a nasi lemak taco. For sure.
Yes.
Or like a chicken rice taco or something.
Oh my god, no, my Hainanese ass is appalled. My grandma would punch you in the face.
You don't want rice in a taco. That's a thing. You can put rice in a burrito.
It could be like a rice tortilla, like a rice tortilla with chicken and like
kind
salt.
Of like a spring roll. Like a popia. hold on, I'm thinking out loud here. Popia burrito with Okay, never mind.
Taco Bell's just gonna tune in and like write all of this down, and if we see it in a few days, we're gonna send a check.
Royalties. I'm getting money for the popia burrito idea.
Yeah, you beg.
I mean, I would like to get like a little like controversial, but like, what would you say are like classic Malaysian dishes?
Oh. Are you saying you think they're all Singaporean? Because that is a shot across the bow. As an outsider, non-Singaporean, let me say my understanding, having lived in this region for a little while and being a food lover and reading a lot about food, is that a lot of the quintessential most famous dishes that are generally like kind of shared and fought by between Malaysia and Singapore originated in Penang, Malaysia. Just gonna throw that out. Sorry, don't at me. I'm leaving the chat.
So they're quite similar. So I mean, I could certainly see like a satay taco with like peanut sauce or something, you know, like something along those lines. Like that wouldn't be too crazy. But yeah, I'm excited. Like, you know, like hopefully like that means that maybe we'll get a Taco Bell back in Singapore at some point.
That would be great. It's actually surprising they don't have one here because I would think this would be a really good market for it.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Shake Shack, Five Guys. It's time. Taco Bell, it's time. We have money. Okay. I'll pass it open.
Start a feed campaign.
Yeah, like A&W came back, so.
Yeah.
Come on.
From the dead. Just to switch gears a bit, over in Manila, someone is having fun. Glad someone's having fun in this pandemic. But yeah, spokesman, Harry Rock, he is swimming with Subic dolphins despite the quarantine. So yeah, he's the presidential spokesman. He made waves on social media, if you will, after a Subic Bay resort shared photos of him taking a dip with the park's dolphins, despite a Metro Manila-wide quarantine, which prohibits non-essential travel. But yeah, Ocean Adventure Park's photos, which were grabbed and shared before they were deleted, showed him grinning from ear to ear while surrounded by four friendly sea creatures. Good for him. Meanwhile, two other photos show the spokesman interacting with a few of the resort staff, most of whom were not wearing face masks. Dude. But yeah, he also definitely wasn't wearing a face mask in the ocean next to his dolphin pals. But yeah.
Good for him. Were the dolphins wearing face masks?
They were not, so I'm calling the police immediately.
This is just, there's so many of these stories of do as I say, don't do as I do, and I'm privileged so I can violate the coronavirus regulations.
And this is essential
just like
travel.
The Thailand guy, yeah, who was having, you know, no mask and no social distancing, big feast at the restaurant, and then, you know, kind of denied that he was there. And he was the exact guy who had been saying for the last several months that everyone has to follow these rules, and he didn't. It's not a nice look. So the biggest news this week in the coconuts universe was definitely the passage of the new national security law in Hong Kong. Mm. The text of this law and what the law entailed was kept very secret until it was revealed, I believe, at around 11 p.m. on June 30th, the night before July 1st, which is the anniversary of the handover of Hong Kong from the UK to China. Yeah, there's been quite a lot of news that has come out of this. People are quite worried, and there's definitely a chilling effect that has happened pretty much instantly. And so we're going to speak with Hilary Leung, our Coconuts Hong Kong associate editor, about the passage of this new law in Hong Kong and what it means.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, Hilary.
Hi, Hilary.
Hi.
So, Hilary, tell us about what is included in this law. And obviously, I think I'm right in saying it was revealed very late on June 30th, right? Which was kind of the last minute before it was enacted.
Yeah, that's right. So the law was imposed on Tuesday, which, which is June 30th. And the text was revealed very late at night, and it came into force at 11 p.m. And so naturally that drew a lot of very angry protests just the day after. So it's a very sweeping piece of criminal legislation that was drafted by Beijing that basically seeks to silence anti-government voices and prevent the protests that swept the city last year from happening again. And so these violations are punishable by sentences as heavy as life imprisonment. So it's definitely a very significant piece of legislation that's just been imposed in Hong Kong. So it outlines four offenses, which include secession, subversion, terrorism, and colluding with foreign forces. And the definition of each of these four offenses are quite vague. And very frankly, just up to Beijing's interpretation. And if we break that down and look at some of the things that protesters did last year, we'll see that basically anything that they did last year could potentially constitute a violation under the new legislation. So, for example, passing out flyers with the words Hong Kong independence could constitute secession. Breaking into the Legislative Council, which they did last year on the anniversary of the handover to China, would be an act of subversion. Vandalizing subway stations could constitute terrorism because in the text, terrorism includes the targeting of public infrastructure. And yeah. Even just waving an American flag or a UK flag to raise international awareness could be seen as colluding with foreign forces.
Wow. So and the next day, wasn't somebody arrested for having a flag?
Mm. Yeah, that's right. So the next day, 10 people were arrested on suspicion of violating the national security law. And that includes at least one person who was waving an independence flag and also possessing flyers with the words Hong Kong independence written on them.
Wow. And I saw, I don't know if this is 100% correct, but I think you will know, Hillary, didn't he have a very tiny little, like the big letters say Hong Kong independence, but then yeah. he had tiny little characters that said like, no to Hong Kong independence.
Yeah, just
to,
yeah. Like,
yeah, so it's like the right. first kind of little challenge and is that actually pro-independence? Actually, I said no Hong Kong independence, but I don't know if the CCP is really going to buy that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that will be a very interesting court case to watch, especially because this was, I think, the very first person who was arrested in violation of the law.
Yeah. And is it true that Hong Kongers or anyone in Hong Kong, because the law, as they put it, even allows them, which of course would be, you know, they don't have jurisdiction over these places, but the way they wrote the law, they said they can kind of, anyone anywhere can be tried for the crimes that they describe. But to speak just specifically about people in Hong Kong, can't they be removed from Hong Kong and taken to mainland China and tried? And so isn't that really kind of the main thing that sparked the original protest last year?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so that's why a lot of people are saying now that they did the right thing by protesting the extradition law. But perhaps that was, you know, pointless because it appears that Beijing has grave enough powers to just impose the law anyway without going through any sort of deliberation or discussion in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are talking about a chilling effect. And I think, as we discussed previously, there was this total uncertainty, which was creating uncertainty and chilling feelings of what is the law going to be for business, for media especially. Now the law is revealed and it's incredibly broad and I think more aggressive than most people thought it might be. What is the reaction in the media business? And is the chilling effect real?
Yeah, so a lot of journalist groups have raised very valid concerns and have asked the government to come out and to basically guarantee that press freedom will not be affected. So I know the Foreign Correspondents Club has tried to do a little bit of work on this, but so far the government has yet to respond. And there's one pro-democracy outlet called Independent Media that has removed over 100 articles that they believe might be politically sensitive. So we are definitely starting to see the effect on media outlets. And a lot of pan-Democrat lawmakers have come out and said that, you know, press freedom in Hong Kong is basically dead or could be dead very soon, depending on how we see this law enforced.
Mm-hmm. Apple Daily and Jimmy Lai, who runs Apple Daily. So Apple Daily is perhaps the biggest news outlet in Hong Kong, would you say, Hillary, or one of them certainly?
I would say one of them, perhaps not the very, yeah. not the biggest. I would say maybe RTHK is the largest.
Okay. So one of the biggest outlets in Hong Kong, Apple Daily, they've historically been very, very pro-independence, right? Or
pro-democracy. Yeah.
Pro-democracy. So is everything that they've been saying for the last several years now kind of subversive and illegal, and what's going to happen to Apple Daily? Can it continue to exist in this environment?
Yeah, that's definitely a very valid concern that I think a lot of people are having, because according to the law, anything seen as secession or subversion could be punishable by life imprisonment. And a lot of the articles and a lot of the op-eds that Apple Daily publishes do very actively advocate for pro-democracy in Hong Kong. And so depending on how Beijing interprets this law, it could be seen as, say, promoting Hong Kong independence, and that could definitely land the paper in a lot of trouble.
Sure. So to switch gears, there was a guy who, it seems, basically stabbed a police officer in one of the protests on July 1st, right? And then he was caught. Can you tell us more about that story?
Yeah, sure. During the protests on Wednesday afternoon, the police were conducting arrests in the Causeway Bay area. There was this incident where a police officer was going after somebody that they wanted to arrest. And so a group of protesters rushed over to that police officer and attacked that police officer to allow the person who was going to be arrested to be able to escape. And so in the midst of that, there was a protester who used some sort of dagger or a sharp object to stab the police officer's arm. And and so there were a lot of very gory pictures that were circulating online after that. So according to the local media, that suspect then bought a one-way ticket to London a flight that was going to leave at, I think, 11:55 p.m. that night. So he bought that one-way ticket. He apparently did not check in any luggage. And he got on that flight successfully. And that plane was about to take off when, at around, I think, 11:45, police somehow received a tip that this suspect was on that flight. And so they rushed to the airport and the plane turned back and they conducted that arrest. So it was definitely a very dramatic turn of events. I think the suspect basically thought that he had made it and that he was off to London.
Crazy.
Yeah, very
dramatic.
He was
on the runway.
Yeah.
That must have been absolutely insane. Now he's, I shudder to think where he is now. because he could have already been taken to mainland China, right? And be facing the whatever sort of prosecution exists under this law.
Yeah. I believe he's currently detained in Hong Kong. So I think, I'm not sure what the outcome of that is, but it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one example that you may not know yet. It may have not be revealed, but is he going to face the Hong Kong criminal justice system, or is he just going to be taken away and face the more opaque Chinese justice system? Is that clear yet? Maybe it's not.
No, it's not clear. It's a lot of things are still very unclear at this point. So even though the full text has been released, there's a lot of criticism that the language is very vague and the English translation came out, I think, only the next day. And so there was a lot of uncertainty among businesses, as to how they would be affected by the law, because for non-Chinese speakers, they still, weren't privy to the details of the legislation.
Yeah. Well, a lot of drama and a lot of, I think, troubling news in Hong Kong. But thank you, Hillary, for joining. I know you'll keep reporting on the occurrences there in Hong Kong and the updates here. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Hillary.
Thank you, Hillary.
Thank you.
Yeah, dire times in Hong Kong.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
The story about the guy getting caught on the runway is insane.
Oh, yeah. I have a few friends.
He obviously did a bad thing. He stabbed a cop, but I don't know. I can't help but feel like, because UK is offering asylum, I think. So,
Are they?
He got to the UK, he was going to be a refugee, basically.
Oh, wow.
But he was on the flight and the flight was on the runway and then it got stopped and he got arrested.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I have a few friends here in Singapore from Hong Kong, and they, are a product of, when Britain was still in charge of Hong Kong, and they're all very, you know, international kids, they're adults, but, you know, they're very, very worried, very, scared for their families and for themselves, about this, you know? So it's really sort of a crazy situation.
Yeah. I think from everybody I know that lives in Hong Kong, it's very much just like, there was so much uncertainty for a long time, as you've said over and over. No one knew what was going to happen. So that was driving a lot of, you know, just speculation and people taking actions that didn't have a lot of grounding in what the law would be. And then the law came out and it was way worse, I think, than anyone expected. And so now that's causing, I think, for some people, borderline panic. And, but again, there's just these crazy inherent contradictions in the entire situation of Hong Kong. Like Carrie Lam, the leader of the country, and a lot of the, well, not the country, the special administrative region of Hong Kong, is saying, oh, nothing's going to change. For media, it's the same. For banking and for business, it's the same. But the law doesn't exactly say that. And so I do think that basically we're going to see a lot of media companies in particular leave Hong Kong. Just full stop, because, you know, a story could be deemed subversive and the writer could be charged under this law. So that previously was not the case. Not at all. You could write whatever you, now you can't. So it's quite sad.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's it for the episode today, guys. Sorry to end on a dour note, but we'll continue what's going on in Hong Kong. Thanks for listening. Thanks for reading Coconuts. Thanks for watching our videos. As always, you can support us by becoming a Coco Plus member at coconuts.co/membership or making a patron payment at coconuts.co/patron. We have removed the paywall from all stories on Coconuts and redefined the value proposition for members. We're no longer really a subscription program where it's a transaction and you're paying for content. We are now a membership program whereby you believe in what we do. You want to support Coconuts because you like the stories that we tell, and you sign up and you can pay anything from $5 a year to, I don't believe there is an upward limit. Let's test it. so thanks everybody for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.
The Coconuts Podcast is a Coconuts Media production. Our hosts are Byron Perry, Vim Shanmugam, and Sama Lee. Our production manager is Clarissa Cortez.